Welcome to season 3 of the To Health With That podcast, where we break up big topics into small bites. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Neuzel, and I'm joined by my dear friend, women's health and fertility expert, naturopathic physician Kate Namas, to break down infertility, hormones, and the whole baby-making shebang. This week, let's finish up our conversation about red flags in women's hormone abnormalities by talking about things like pelvic pain, cramping, acne, and fatigue.
Pelvic pain and cramping.
I hear women say this is normal all the time. Well, I cramp, or I'm in bed for a day at the start of my period.
Right. Not normal. Right. Not normal. I mean, normal, but not healthy.
Yeah, exactly. Common, right. But not
common. Not, yes. I usually tell women that if you have a little bit of mild cramping the day before you start bleeding, or a little mild cramping on cycle day 1, 2, and 3, that's not interfering again with activities of daily living, doesn't mean you can't parent or brush your teeth or drive in a car. That's a reasonable amount. And anything more than that, we shouldn't be living with.
Completely agree.
Yep. One of my favorite things is pelvic floor PT, but we won't get into that anymore because there's amazing. So many different causes. But I love pelvic floor PT for unexplained cramping, like when nobody can get to the bottom of it.
Also incredible for pain with intercourse.
So with pelvic pain or cramping, which we call dysmenorrhea, that could be a sign of endometriosis, fibroids, sometimes PCOS, I see that less, and ovarian cysts, which would be more around ovulation, but not necessarily. Mm-hmm. PMS, premenstrual syndrome, or PMDD, which is just a more severe form, usually comes in those last 7 days prior to the new cycle. Mm-hmm. I mean, most women are going to experience some emotional changes in the premenstrual phase, but sure. Some women are even more emotionally sensitive to hormone fluctuations. And if you are having PMS or PMDD that is significantly impacting your quality of life, it's not only important for quality of life, but for potentially affecting your fertility.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that really matters. And a lot of women just live with it, right? It's Absolutely. Just how it's always been, but it doesn't Push have through. To always be that.
Nope. Nosebleeds at the start or during menses. Tell me about this one.
I love this. So I have seen this actually in a number of patients who just, you know, mentioned it in passing. Like, it's not really a problem. It happens sometimes where I'll notice it'll be a few spots of blood on a tissue and it can be a sign of endometriosis. So endometrial tissue can actually travel that far, which is really interesting.
Fascinating. Chronic acne. And again, this isn't like the acne you get when you're going through puberty. This is something more significant and more serious. And oftentimes, this is typically an androgen issue, testosterone, although it can absolutely be more complex. And we should be thinking about PCOS, especially if we've got cystic acne, or if you notice that you get acne at a certain phase of the cycle, that's another good indicator that perhaps your hormones are out of balance.
Yes. Yeah. So acne during puberty, even though it felt incredibly consequential, pretty normal.
Yes. Yes. And then acne comes back sometimes perimenopausally too. But that's another reason to reach out to your OB-GYN because you might need hormone replacement therapy. Mm-hmm. Lower abdominal bloating. This is a great one. And I would say that ovarian cancer is just ignored and missed until it's too late. So if you're having chronic lower abdominal bloating, your clothes aren't fitting the way that they used to, you're still exercising, you're eating well, it doesn't quite make sense. This is absolutely a symptom to report to your doctor.
And make sure they follow up because a lot of doctors will dismiss that as just a vanity complaint and not a real medical issue.
Right.
And not through any ill will of theirs, just they're busy, right? They've got a lot going on. So
or get a gastro referral. Everything will come back normal. Don't give up. Now it's time to loop back with that initial doctor and say, the symptom's still there. Thank you so much for the gastro referral, but I don't have an answer yet. What are our next steps?
Also, I am concerned about ovarian cancer.
Oh yeah. Number one, if we've gotten to that place, then I'm very concerned about it.
I am concerned about ovarian cancer. Please, can we rule this out?
Yes. Right? Exactly. Right. Verbalize that to your doctor.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at that point, they really cannot ignore it. But if you are thinking in that direction, they will take you seriously and they will follow up.
Yep, exactly.
Fatigue. Well, yeah. So occasional fatigue is normal, right? That's sort of life. But ongoing fatigue can indicate a deeper problem. So thyroid, hypothyroid is a very common cause actually for ongoing fatigue. It's more common in women, but men have thyroid issues too. So definitely get this looked at. Excess progesterone. Also, if you get a progesterone secreting IUD and have fatigue, mm-hmm. it could be secondary to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did that. It was not a great idea for me.
Yeah. And women will report weight gain with the progesterone birth control methods, even the mini pill sometimes, if you're progesterone sensitive.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But also chronic fatigue or CFS or ME, it's also being called myalgic encephalomyelitis. It is obviously a problem for fertility, right? Because if your body has become pathological to the degree that you're having constant fatigue, that is an issue for fertility. But it is also a very common indicator that you have an MTHFR issue. And MTHFR is obviously associated with a higher incidence of repeat pregnancy loss.
Mm-hmm. And so, my last plug for fatigue would be an autoimmune workup.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because it could be any of the autoimmune diseases leading to that kind of deep bone fatigue where life is no longer enjoyable and you just don't have the energy that you used to. Bring, especially women, because fatigue will be ignored by doctors. They'll just say, oh, well, you're busy. You've got a lot going on. You're working full time. But if you've got chronic fatigue, that's also time to think about an autoimmune workup and bring that up as well.
Yep. That's a really good point.
Hot flashes. One of my favorite symptoms, actually. I've never had hot flashes. So I don't mean personally. I just mean as a doctor. I am frequently surprised at how hot flashes are overlooked and ignored. Unless you are known to be perimenopausal and you have actively decided after getting education that you do not want to do hormone replacement therapy, hot flashes should be corrected. Hot flashes are most often a sign of low estrogen. They can be a sign of other things, especially like, say, postpartum, you can have some hot flashes, or after weaning, you can have some hot flashes, but those should all resolve within a cycle or two. But if you're noticing repeat hot flashes over time, usually that's a sign of low estrogen and that needs to be assessed, because if we have low estrogen, we're usually not going to be conceiving.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Hot flashes and night sweats are the same thing. Some women experience them as like a rising heat sensation in the face, like you're super embarrassed. That's kind of what a hot flash feels like. Or it can also be like actually sweating, wetting the sheets. Mm-hmm.
I want to talk a bit about weight gain.
Yes, do it, please.
So it doesn't count if it's COVID and you're doing the COVID baking, which I did. I loved the COVID baking. It was super fun. But if you have not changed your diet or lifestyle, right? You're eating a fairly clean diet. You're exercising to the level that you usually do. And you have unexplained weight gain. Then that can be a sign that something's going wrong. Mm-hmm. Insulin resistance. We overlook insulin resistance or prediabetes in this culture because it's so common, right? Everybody's got it. It's like a belly button.
Totally.
But the problem is that does affect your estrogen levels and it leads to fertility troubles.
Yep.
Also, PCOS, persistent weight gain, and PCOS very often, if women are going to experience weight gain with PCOS, it's very often rapid weight gain. And then also adrenal or stress hormone imbalance, which again, imbalances those sex hormones. Mm-hmm.
And my last one would be perimenopause.
Yeah, fair point. Yeah.
Another one that will sometimes lead to persistent weight gain. And I think women just don't have in their mind that perimenopause can start at 35. You know, that's right. Why I just keep bringing it up. We think, oh, that's like the 55 and plus. No. Menopause is over by then. Perimenopause can start way earlier in years where you absolutely are still wanting to make babies and have babies.
Yeah.
So I would just add that as another one.
Yeah, exactly. That is a really great point.
Pain with sex, especially penetration, can indicate low estrogen hormones, especially if there's vaginal dryness or stinging. It can also indicate endometriosis or an STI.
Yeah, that's true. STI, mm-hmm. I didn't think about.
So that's, again, not something that we should just live with. If we have new pain with intercourse, reach out to your physician. Let them know you have the symptoms so that you can understand why it is. Because an STI is a very different reason than low estrogen is,
right.
Or a mass or a tumor.
Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily have to be something to do with hormones, actually. It can also be, say, a mass or tumor in the digestive tract.
Exactly. And it's normal to have some transient pain with intercourse after having a baby, whether vaginally or through C-section. But again, there are ways to improve that. And probably those causes aren't going to affect fertility unless it's drastically affecting your ability to have intercourse.
Right.
Low sex drive, or what we call libido.
It's a thing.
Yeah, it really is. I've been practicing for 14 years. I think you've been practicing a little longer, or maybe I've, 14 years sounds about right.
19 for me.
Okay. Yeah. So most women, most meaning over 60%, report decreased sex drive after their 30th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And then decreased sex drive with each subsequent baby that they have, decreased sex drive with perimenopause, decreased sex drive with hypothyroidism. It's complicated and it's not always the easiest to do a workup with, but it's an important symptom to note.
It is an important symptom, and especially if there's a sudden change, right? So
yes.
That's not related to your relationship circumstance.
Yes, exactly. And as I tell women, especially if you don't even notice an increased sex drive right before ovulation.
Yeah.
Because some women just sometimes, as we age, we don't have as much of a sex drive, but most women can still feel desirous and libidinous right around ovulation. And if even that has flatlined, then that's usually a sign of a pretty low drive that may be needing assessment.
Yes, exactly.
Infertility. This is an important one. So infertility, you're not getting pregnant when you're trying to. And we talked about the definition in detail, but if you've been trying for a year or more and you haven't conceived, then you definitely fall into that category.
And I want to point out that trying doesn't have to be actively trying. It can be not preventing.
Exactly.
Right? If you're not preventing conception.
And you're having unprotected sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. You don't have to be perfectly timing it every month for 12 months. You just have to be having some sex every month.
Exactly. If you're having some sex, you're not using any protection and you're not having a baby. Here we are.
Exactly. That's a really good point. And then a sudden change in your cycle is very much something to pay attention to with fertility and trying to conceive. You've always had one type of period. You bleed for 4 days. It's bright red blood. And then it stops on day 5. And now you're bleeding for 7, 8, 9 days. It's trickling out. You're spotting. We haven't even talked about spotting. I think we should add that right here. So spotting can be a sign of a polyp. Spotting can be a sign of low progesterone. Spotting can be a sign of in the follicular phase, in the early half of your cycle, can be a sign of perimenopause. So spotting is not normal. I think a lot of women will just accept spotting as part of a normal cycle. But spotting, especially in conjunction with not conceiving quickly, should be looked into. And I have found most often, especially spotting in the mid-luteal phase, is polyps.
Yes. Good point. Really good point. Yeah. And that should be evaluated, right?
Yep.
Like, don't let that go unseen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. I think that's all I've got.
Yay. So those are our red flags for hormone abnormalities that need to be checked out and not ignored.
Kate and I busted time today because, let's face it, we like to talk. Please watch the video version in the show notes. See more of Dr. Kate at namesnd.com. That's namesnd.com. Or visit tohealthwiththat.com for myself, Dr. Amy. See you next week.